Good morning, Council. Reminder, when you approach the podium, please state your name and indicate which party you're speaking on behalf of for our recording purposes. You'll each have 15 minutes for your argument with an additional 5 minutes reserved to appellant counsel for rebuttal if you choose to exercise that. Go ahead and settle in, and appellate counsel, when you are ready, please approach the podium.
Hear me all right? May it please the court and counsel, my name is Ryan Tyson. I'm here on behalf of the appellants Brian Blowett and Nancy Kaperwicks, and we are here today to ask the court to overturn the district court's dismissal of appellants' claims. While there are five issues that I'll be discussing today, I'll note that the first two are really the crux of the argument today, so I'm going to focus heavily on those because they kind of tie into the rest.
Mr. Tice, could you speak up, please?
Yes, I'm sorry.
That's all right. I am having a little difficulty hearing.
The first issue note that I'll be discussing is the improper application of the standard of review by the district court, including the reliance on fact issues from a contested hearing to make factual determinations. The second will be how appellants have pled sufficient facts to defeat respondents' immunity claims, followed by the fact that appellants have pled sufficient facts for their false arrest 1983 and conversion claims to survive a motion to dismiss, and finally, why the vicarious liability claims are sufficient to survive a motion, and I will address each in turn. I'll also note that the standard review here is de novo for the court. Now, following standard review, that ties into the first arguments here that it was inappropriate for the court to rely on the omnibus order in dismissing these claims. Minnesota is a notice pleading state. That means that a claim is sufficient to survive a motion to dismiss if it is possible and any evidence which might be produced consistent with the pleader's theory to grant the relief demanded. A pleading will only be dismissed if it appears to a certainty that no facts which could be introduced consistent with that pleading exist which would support granted relief. Now, importantly, and appropriate here, factual allegations must be treated as true and all inferences made in appellant's favor. And here it's indisputable that favorable inferences were not made for the appellants, rather for respondents.
You know, Mr. Tice, on that point, and I agree with you, you've correctly stated the Rule 12 standard for disputed facts, but I guess why couldn't the court under Rule 201 take judicial notice of the omnibus order? I think the police report is a separate issue, because that is capable of accurate and ready determination by resort to sources whose accuracy cannot reasonably be questioned. I mean, why under that standard couldn't the district court take judicial notice of its own omnibus order?
The court can take notice that an order was had, but the court in this case was relying on the facts and opinions of that order, and it's inappropriate
right,
for judicial notice.
Which it did after having a hearing, right?
It did after having a hearing.
And allowing witnesses to testify, right?
Correct.
And making credibility determinations, right?
Well, the credibility determination was taken with the facts most favorable toward the state in this instance. It was Officer Huener on the stand. His version of the events was taken as true. So really what this is doing by relying on that order, which relies exclusively on the testimony of Officer Huener, you're flipping the Rule 12 standard on its head. It's simply impossible to give deference to appellants in this matter while taking into account.
But I mean, what is the district court to do? I mean, in these types of cases, I mean, it would seem to me odd for the district court in a 1983 action relating to police incidents to sort of ignore the order it issued or another court issues dealing with what happened that forms the basis of your complaint. I mean, if that's the case, I mean, summary judgment wouldn't be granted because you'd say the same things. Well, that's what the order says, but, you know, we're going to still go to trial. what would happen at the trial? I mean, these qualified immunity issues are legal issues. Is the court going to either admit or not admit its own order in the 1983 trial? That seems odd.
I would say ignore the order, but you have to take into account that...
Well, how can the court make a decision on qualified immunity if at some point it doesn't look at the order on either, you know, on summary judgment? I mean, you do agree that these immunity issues are legal issues, right?
I do agree that they're legal issues.
Well, then you're saying because they're in dispute, it has to go to the jury. Well, how does it go to the jury if it's a legal issue? And how does the court determine the legal issue without taking some notice of its own order?
Because the legal issue is entirely fact-based, and these facts are proper for a jury.
Well,
and we have cases stating
then summary judgment would never be granted. Summary judgment would never be granted in a 1983 action because you'd always say, well, that's been disputed.
But we're not talking about a summary judgment action here. Summary judgment, you have both sides of the story. We're talking about a motion to dismiss where appellants have not had their version of the story. They were not allowed to for the purpose of this omnibus hearing.
Sure. Well, you know, let me shift to a different argument or a different question. As I understand it, then, you're saying, you know, you dispute three things.
Minimum.
The three big things you point out, you know, and here I'm looking at, the anonymous complaint, you know, the hunting over three consecutive days and the bait 150 yards, where your client was observed, right? Those are the three big things, right?
Correct.
You know, in looking at the amended complaint, paragraphs 27 and 28, I think it's a fair statement that you're disputing two and three. I don't see anywhere in the amended complaint that you're disputing that there was an anonymous complaint. Let's stop there. Would that be a fair statement?
That's fair to say that that was not specifically referenced, but I think when you take the claims...
Well, I mean, it wasn't referenced at all. That'd be a fair statement, right?
Correct.
And we've got to look at the amended complaint because that's kind of... This is what I'm saying, right?
Okay. You do, but as long as...
Well, if... All right, so I'll stop there. Go ahead.
As long as the complaint in the whole can lead you to believe this, then
well,
that's
probably... Well, I don't know about that. I mean...
We're
discussing now what's in dispute. And I agree with you, two and three are based on 27 and 28. I see nowhere in the amended complaint that you're disputing there was an anonymous complaint.
And you'd be correct, but I would back up and say that the reason I'm arguing is disputed
here. Does the anonymous complaint alone, would that be enough for the stop? No. When he then goes to this place where it's supposedly occurring, and, you know, there's the truck. And I'm not saying he saw the bait, because you dispute that. I'm not saying he could have seen it, you know, whatever it was, 500 yards away or blah, blah, blah. But the truck's coming out of the cornfield in hunting season, and there's been an honest complaint that this guy is hunting bait. Isn't that enough under reasonable suspicion to stop the car?
Well, no, because we haven't determined that he was hunting here. Where they're claiming this bait was is over a half a mile away.
Well, his complaint was he was hunting in hunting season using anonymous bait, and then all of a sudden this truck comes out on the land that he owns, and maybe I'm wrong, I don't know a lot, but generally speaking, you're not supposed to be driving around in your truck shooting at the animals. You're supposed to be giving them a fair chance. So then it's like he's in the truck, there's an anonymous complaint, he's baiting, and then this truck comes out. I mean, I would say, whoa, why isn't that enough reasonable suspicion to at least stop the truck?
Because he's claiming that he observed him doing this, but there was nothing to suggest that he was hunting. It was a truck sitting in a field a half a mile away from where this anonymous complaint was stating they were at. And a half a mile is a big difference than 150 yards. Half a mile is well out of rifle range, and it's for a DNR officer that has specialized knowledge of this to recognize that he's not anywhere near the area that they're claiming that he's doing this, where this bait is. He has to know that it was impossible for him to be hunting over bait when this bait was a half mile away and out of rifle range.
Okay. Fair enough. Go ahead.
So continuing on the judicial notice, they have to be very... The reason these facts can't get in is they have to be verifiable facts. And In this case, the judge held that in his opinion, a jury may affirm the version of events of Officer Huener. A jury may affirm doesn't verify it. That's not enough. That's saying maybe if we give them their day in court. So I think it's inappropriate to
How
just make-
How do you argue that you were not given proper notice that this, that the court would rely on these records when you had it in your complaint to begin with? And you've referenced the court files, the criminal action files.
I'm not saying you can't take notice of the order. What we're saying is you can't rely on the contents of the order because in this case, it was exclusively hearsay. So it's one thing to say there was an order.
Police report.
Yes. Well, no.
But I mean, I think Judge Werke's point
everything.
Is different.
You're claiming that you weren't given notice that the judge could potentially be relying on that omnibus order. I'm not talking about the police report. But if you've referenced it in your complaint and you've referenced the court file numbers in which there was criminal activity and then the Rasmussen hearing, how can you claim that you wouldn't have any notice that the judge might look at that?
I'm not claiming that there was no notice that the judge might not look at it. We're saying that it's inappropriate based on Rule 201. You can take notice that an order existed, but when you look at the contents of this order, and specifically this one, it relies exclusively on hearsay. And I'm not just saying the
okay,
police
so you're
report.
Not saying that you were surprised and that this snuck up on you and you didn't know that that could have happened. You're just saying it was improper.
Correct. It was an abuse of discretion. It was improper for the judge to take the contents of that order and use them as the basis to make factual determinations that there was reasonable suspicion. The main takeaway on that point is this. The complaint and the omnibus order are at odds. For one to be taken as true, the other
parts
must...
Parts of them are. I agree. Parts of them are.
So for one to be taken as true, the other must be presumed false. Here the benefit, as you acknowledge, was taken to the respondents. And legally, on a Rule 12 in the civil matter here, that is entitled to appellants. Therefore, on that subject alone, we believe it's sufficient for the court to overturn just on that basis, on abuse of discretion.
Let's say, for the sake of argument, I agree with you, there's problems with the police report because of hearsay, and under Rule 201, you know, that's not capable of accurate and ready determination by resort to sources whose accuracy cannot reasonably be questioned. I mean, you know, at the end of the day, we generally don't let police reports ever in. Mm-hmm. So, but let me ask you this. So let's say that was error. Do you dispute that your client had a beat card?
I do not dispute my client.
Do you dispute that there were alcohol in the vehicle? Oh, are these empty bottles? Do you dispute that?
In part.
Okay. What do you dispute?
The empty bottles were in a trash bag in the bed of the truck and could not be discovered without going into that bag. There's also no evidence to suggest they were my clients. These came from a cabin that was owned by multiple parties. He simply brought the trash out. He didn't know what the contents of that trash was. But that also goes to the fact that there was this encounter. It went on for 45 minutes before there was a PVT administered. He talked to him over and over again for 45 minutes. There was no signs of any indicia of alcohol or intoxication, yet he demanded it anyway. And their excuse that he was subject to random testing by virtue of this B-card is just outright false. No such law exists. A B card simply states that you are restricted from alcohol. You still have to have probable cause to show.
Did he search the trash bag that had the empty bottles before the PPT?
After.
After the PPT?
Correct.
Okay.
And I want to back up for just a moment because I know there's been a lot of talk about the police report here, but I will note that the testimony I'm referring to was the personal testimony of Officer Huener, not the police report. The order for the omnibus order is very clear that it was the personal testimony, speaking testimony of Officer Huener, and that is not allowed. And in fact, the Zempel case was illustrative of that, and that one where the underlying case was actually adjudicated to the merits, and they said even though it was adjudicated to the merits, even though there was a record here, even though the person making the statements was here to affirm them, it's still inappropriate, and they dismissed or overturned the dismissal for that reason alone. Now, Officer Huener The second part of the state's arguments is that Officer Huener is entitled to qualified immunity. Now, immunity, I'll try to go quick with this. It's basically, was the officer's judgment unreasonable? If so, no, immunity doesn't apply. And when analyzing that, you look, was it a willfully, did the officer willfully or maliciously ignore those rights? Now, it's important in this context that those are synonyms, and that's Rice v. State that says that, because I noticed in the briefs, willful, or in respondent's brief, willful is not used a whole lot. They focus highly on malicious, and that's quite a bit different in other contexts. Willful is just knew or should have known. And here we have to remember that this was a police officer. A DNR officer. He has specialized knowledge of the law. The Fourth Amendment stops, that's all beat over your head in training school. There's just no excuse where they don't know that you can't force someone to take a PBT or state that it's illegal to otherwise refute one. And I see my time is up. Sorry, go over.
I shall have rebuttal time too.
May it please the court, counsel. My name is Marta James. I'm here today on behalf of respondents to Department of Natural Resources and DNR Officer Ben Huener. Today, respondents ask this court to affirm the district court's decision in full for two primary reasons. First, the legal determinations in the related criminal omnibus order are entitled to a presumption of correctness in the civil matter that Officer Huener's actions were objectively legally reasonable. That is a presumption. And a presumption is rebuttable. An appellant failed.
Well, I mean, if we agree with you that the order comes in, right? That the court was permitted under Rule 201 that the order can be relied upon.
Correct. So there's two issues here. There's the presumption, and then there's the fact that the district court took judicial notice of the order itself. And both of those decisions were proper in this case. And the reason they were proper is because this entire case is based on immunity. And Officer Huener's qualified immunity and official immunity. And to defeat immunity, the appellants needed to establish on the face of the complaint that the acts of Officer Huener were objectively, legally unreasonable. And they simply failed to do that. They simply failed to argue that a reasonable officer in Officer Huener's position could not have stopped this vehicle to investigate hunting over bait, and then through the course of the stop, developed probable cause for the criminal charges that were later brought. And why does this presumption apply here, and why does this presumption matter? For all the reasons that Judge Connolly discussed earlier with appellant's counsel. Because a neutral magistrate had a hearing, reviewed briefs, not only considered Officer Huener's testimony, but also considered the entire Florence packet. And on the face of the omnibus order, they talk about the record that was considered. That includes not only the civil complaint, the Florence packet, including the narrative report, audio recording of the stop, photos of the stop, licenses, affidavits. There was a host of information that a neutral magistrate considered. And from that record, from that evidence, the judge in the district court in the criminal matter against Brian Blowett determined there was reasonable suspicion for the stop and probable cause for the charges. And again, what are the charges here? The charges were hunting over bait and transporting big game without a license. And the presumption—
Would it be fair to say, Ms. James, that when it came to the PBT, the court was not so much relying on the basis for the PBT was not so much relying on its order, but the police reports. Would that be a fair statement?
The district court's?
Yes.
The district court's decision below right. did refer to the narrative report of Officer Huener.
When do we ever take judicial notice of police reports? I mean, that seems odd.
Well, again, that wasn't something that respondents argued below. That was something that the district court did.
No, but I mean, here we're kind of stuck because if we were to try to affirm this, under the Rule 12 standard that Mr. Tice has articulated, it's one thing to say it was fair game to rely on the order. It's something else to say it was fair game to rely And here I'm just talking about whether the PBT was justified. I'm not talking about the rest of it.
So,
how do we rely, how could we affirm under Rule 201 that the decision to rely on the police report to justify the PBT was proper under Rule 12?
The issue here is immunity. And
I got it.
Understood.
I think we all got it. I'm almost positive we got
it. Okay, I'm glad we all agree on that. So to defeat immunity, it has to be that no reasonable officer could have made the decision to request a PBT.
Right.
Now,
what were the grounds to request the PBT? As outlined,
Brian Blawick consented to the PBT. And to defeat qualified immunity, appellants needed to plead facts to show that that consent, even to give a PBT in the face of consent, was objectively, legally unreasonable. They have not cited to any case law in
but
this.
But you agree that the bottles, cans, I can't remember what they were, that were in the bag, that those were found after the PBT?
No, I don't agree with that. And that's clear on the face of the narrative report. The narrative report indicates that the bags were in the back of the truck and then
Okay, this is, you know, as Judge Werke always does, gets to the heart of the issue. Okay. Well, first of all, let's start this. Did he give the PBT before he searched the truck and found the trash bag with bottles?
No. That is not my reading of the narrative report.
Okay.
And
well, I guess we'll all be reading the narrative report.
To defeat... But the purpose here, Your Honor...
Well, let's just stop it. Do you dispute that the empty alcohol bottles were in a trash bag in the truck?
That was the record that was before the district court, and that was the record that the district court looked at to determine that there was reasonable suspicion
but
here.
But are you arguing... You're saying it was voluntary that he asked the appellant to take a PBT. So what difference does it make when they saw the bottles?
It doesn't.
When he saw the bottles. So what are you saying? The bottles are important or they're not? Your argument is who cares?
I'm saying both. I'm saying that to defeat qualified immunity here, the officer's actions had to be objectively, legally unreasonable. And on the face of the complaint, what's pled about the PBT is that a PBT was demanded, that Blawett asked if he was serious, Officer Huner asked if he was refusing, and then he complied. I don't know of any case law in this state that says that an officer is subject to civil damages in a civil action for 1983 liability for giving a PBT to an individual who has consented to a PBT.
What if we believe it was coerced consent?
Well, even though the circumstances are uncomfortable, that it's not enough to establish coercion. State v. Brooks is very clear on that. And State v. Brooks is a situation where we're talking about implied consent, an actual alcohol breath test. This is a PBT. A PBT is a very slight intrusion. And importantly, again, Your Honors, he did have a B card restriction. And that doesn't go away simply because it's not pled on the face of the complaint. That's a matter of public record.
And I agree with that.
Right. And
but let's say for the sake of argument that we don't find consent, okay? You know, voluntary consent, that he was coerced, particularly if we look at the amended complaint, which seems to suggest he was not consenting voluntarily. Then all you've got, I mean, can you just... under these facts, ask someone for a BBT simply because they have a B card, and when they don't appear to have any indicia of alcohol consumption?
The issue is not, in my opinion, whether or not you can or cannot. The issue is whether an objectively reasonable, competent officer would have thought it was reasonable to ask for a PBT in this situation.
Right. And I'm saying that's got to be based on some facts, and normally it's, you know, smell of alcohol, the stumbling around, blah, 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 you know, and then he swerved to begin with. We don't have any of that. So, and you don't have, I mean, and we'll check on this, believe me. But let's say for the sake of arguments, I think it would be different if he has got a B card, which means no alcohol consumption, and you can clearly see empty alcohol bottles in the car. You know, then speaking for myself only, I'm okay with a PBT. But if all you've got is a B card and nothing else, and let's say, as I said, I understand your point, he consented, so we don't have to get to that. What's the grounds for reasonable suspicion to give him the PBT?
The grounds are, again, the alcohol bottles in the car as
which
well.
He didn't, well, and you dispute that the, well, I want to make sure I understand. Do you dispute that the bottles were in the trash bag, or are you saying the empty bottles were readily visible?
I'm saying that what is in the narrative report is what the district court had before it.
Well, let's say for the sake of argument, the narrative report says the empty bottles were in a trash bag and you couldn't, and that, you know, this distinguished DNR officer does not have x-ray vision. Okay. So then we're back to, if it's no consent, what was the basis for the PBT if all he's got is, I know he's got a B card, which means he can never consume alcohol when he's driving, but that's all I've got.
But the narrative report also discusses the fact that the officer talked to Blauett about the fact that he was subject to random testing. Now, whether or not that is true, I don't know. That's not in the narrative report. What's in the narrative report is that an officer understood the B card to mean he was subject to random testing. He asked appellant
that's a loser because, you know, you can make a reasonable suspicion that someone's broken the law, but if the law, but you don't get a, if the law hasn't been broken, the officer can't rely on a reasonable suspicion for something that's not a law violation. I mean, that's absolutely clear. So he can't rely, I mean, if a B card does not permit random testing, and the officer thinks that, but it doesn't, that's a loser. Am I wrong?
What I want this court to focus on is the immunity, Your Honors.
You know,
I understand you would appreciate that. But this, it's
not... Well, I'm glad you want us to focus on immunity, and believe me, the panel is laser-focused on that. But here's my concern, and I'll just sort of, at this point, lay out my cards.
Okay.
I think it was fair game to rely on the order, even under Rule 12. But I have concerns about Rule 12 as it relates to this. And so what I'm trying to figure out is if there's a way I can just rely on undisputed facts, not in the police report, undisputed facts, period, wherever they are, either in the order or the police report, to get reasonable suspicion for the stop and the PBT. And I thought going in here, there might have been reasonable suspicion for the PBT based on the B card and the empty bottles. But now I'm hearing, and Mr. Tice obviously knows the record far better than I do, that he couldn't, first of all, that he didn't do the search of the trash bag prior to the PBT, he did it after. And in any event, the trash bag concealed alcoholic bottles. So now I'm kind of stuck because I do have concerns about relying on the police report. What I'm trying to find out is what undisputed facts are there to support the PBT? You got the B card, because I heard him say I didn't dispute that. But I don't see anything else that gets me to the PBT. What do you think?
And again, I believe on the face of the complaint, there are allegations that he consented to the PBT.
Fair enough.
I also think that to defeat qualified immunity, you have to establish that Officer Huener violated a clearly established constitutional right. And as you all know, the parameters around a PBT are not clearly established in the state after Vondracek.
You know, I don't know if this is the case to say
it isn't.
A PBT is a fine search, and I think I'm not going to go there. So I'd like to punt on that for sure.
Can I just follow up on one of Judge Cummings' questions about the specifics around the PBT? So the district court said that Mr. Blauett acknowledged he was subject to random testing due to the B card.
Right.
I mean, is that an undisputed, which is a little different than saying did he consent or not, kind of which gets into the voluntary issue. Mm-hmm. Is that undisputed, the fact that he acknowledged that? Maybe you could tell me from your perspective, Mr. Tice, you could tell me as well.
That is what was in the narrative report that was relied on by the district court to determine that there was reasonable suspicion and probable cause for the charges.
Which doesn't,
but
maybe we'll find
out if
it's
disputed.
But
the flip side of that, Your Honors, is this is a motion to dismiss. And we have to accept the facts put on the face of the complaint as true. And what facts on the face of the complaint dispute that he was subject to random testing? What facts dispute that there were empty Crown Royal bottles in the back of the vehicle? There aren't any facts. And to overcome the immunity defenses here, the appellants needed to plead facts that the record that the district court relied on was fraudulent, that Officer Huener sat on the stand and lied, that the narrative report is made up, that the audio recording of the stop, it was not enough to show there was reasonable suspicion, and incidentally, that the breath test took place after the bottles were found. That is what this court should and can take, that's what the district court took judicial notice of, and that presumption that a neutral officer or neutral magistrate looked at those facts and determined this officer's actions were reasonable. They were objectively, legally reasonable. And that is the standard, and that is why this court should affirm the district court's decision based on that presumption and based on the clear immunity defenses. Because, again, immunity is not only an affirmative defense, it's a bar to litigation, and it should be determined at the earliest possible stage. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. James. Mr. Tice, you'll have the last word.
The first thing I'd like to address is this presumption of correctness, which respondent's brief mentions dozens of times. There is no such thing as a presumption of correctness anywhere. That phrase that they're using was, I suspect, coined by them, and I'll admit it was clever and effective, but the cases that they cite to support this just simply do not say that. And the two cases they point on are the Satterdalen and McSherry case. The Satterdalen case involves registration of property. He was a dual citizen, had a property in Minnesota. There was some reasons from an underlying matter, some criminal history, where he had to register where he was. He had a vacation home in Belize. The officer in that case, he didn't register the one in Belize. The officer in that case obtained a warrant stating that he didn't register his home address. The district court overturned this one because the officer's basis on that was a reading of an obscure statute and said that no reasonable officer in that position could have understood that, could have understood the statute, so immunity applies. It doesn't say anything about a presumption of correctness anywhere. In fact, the quote, I forget the one that they use in their brief, is just an offhand. I believe they admit that the facts in the order were true. It didn't have anything to do with the order, though. All it was just in passing saying, yes, he agrees that he didn't register the property. It had nothing to do with the case. The second case, the McSherry one, that's a summary judgment case, so the standard is different. But the thing that isn't mentioned on that one is that that was the second appeal of that case. The first one was a dismissal on the pleadings. And that case was overturned for the very reasons that I'm arguing today. The Court of Appeals overturned that, saying that judgment as a matter of law is not permitted before the accused has been afforded the opportunity to present evidence bearing on the issue of qualified immunity. And that's what we are asking here. And that case is McSherry v. City of Long Beach, 423 F3D 1015, 9th Circuit, 2005. The 2015 case is the one that they are citing. I would disagree that it hasn't been that consent is clear through the complaint. Plainly states that it's demanded and that he feared for refusal. There's nothing in there that says you have to state exactly what you are rebutting. As long as you can draw from these statements that they are supporting your position, that is sufficient. And it can't be disputed that he is saying that he demanded the test and that I believe it's 36, that he feared for refusal. I'll go back to the issue on whether, or the dispute effect of whether the bottles were before or after I'm getting that from the body cam footage, which wasn't here.
And the what?
From the police.
Oh, the body cam.
Recorder. We didn't use that because it's very
different. Is that in the record?
It is not in the record.
Okay. What's in the record that shows... What's in the record or the police report or... Well, where would I find in the record whether the bottles were in the bag and that the... Well, stop there. Where would I find in the record that the bottles were in the bag?
I believe that was discussed in the omnibus hearing, which I'm saying you can't rely on.
Where would I find the discussion of that, you know, he gave the PBT before he even searched the truck for the bottles in the bag?
Because he stated, well, in the complaint it says that 45 minutes went by of questioning prior to the PBT being administered. At that point,
Right, but after, I mean, that says 45 minutes go on. What I'm trying to find is where in the amended complaint do you dispute that this search of the truck was after the PBT?
Go ahead, Your Honor.
No, I'm just looking at, following up on Judge Connolly's questions, paragraph 31 of the second amended complaint, which is kind of, he then searched the vehicle, and then 32 is he demanded the blood alcohol test.
Thank you, Judge Jessen.
The search of the vehicle was the cab.
Your time has expired, but please answer Judge Jessen's question.
I'll just say the search of the vehicle was the cab. The bag and the bottles were all behind that. In the bed of the truck, the initial 45 minutes of this search consisted of them going through, rifling through pockets, questioning about prescription drugs. I understand that's not in there. I'm just providing you context for it. That's all I can answer, Your Honor.
And I just want to note, I didn't see it in the omnibus order. All right. Thank you to both counsel. The arguments were very interesting. A decision will be issued in the statutory time frame.